And so I decided once I came out when I was 17, never to go back in the closet. So even, you know, from the first time I applied for jobs, even when I went to university, I was always very open about being gay, even if it meant that I was having a harder time at school, or, you know, I'll apply for jobs and I had job interviews and I'll be very open about it, because my view of the world was I'd rather be honest about it. And if someone has a problem with it, not to hire me and find a different reasons why they didn't hire me, than to not be able to be myself when I go somewhere.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of In Check with FinTech by PCN, where we interview CEOs, founders, and executives from the FinTech space about their personal experiences, their companies, market trends, industry insights, and more. Today we have the pleasure to be joined by Modi Bring, CEO at PPro, a London-based FinTech. Modi is a highly regarded leader in the payments industry with over two decades of experience, including a number of executive positions with global providers. He has an impeccable track record in driving growth, transforming businesses, and creating value for customers and partners. Prior to joining PPro, he spent 7 years in senior management roles at Worldpay and served as chief commercial officer at payments technology company Nuve. Enjoy listening.
I say let's just start off. I have a pretty broad, open first question for you. Which I'll let you answer. There's no right answer there, obviously, right? But where do we need to start to understand you?
Oh, wow. That's a very open question. I think, like any person, probably start in childhood and preferences and how you start to develop. I was quite an introvert. I was one of those kids who would sit at home alone and read the encyclopedia and try to learn more things, because it was easier to read than to engage with other kids. So I think what that gave me is curiosity and desire to learn more and more and change. And curiosity, I think, has been key to a lot of what happened in my life, including, you know, what I think is a very successful career.
Yeah.
So being kind of curious all the time and open to new ideas, new technologies, new theories has been key to and change, right? Like, because it's, if I look at the last 20 years and what happened in the world, in payments, in new technologies, how people are paying for stuff, work environment, from 5 days in the office to remote to hybrid, and how you adapt to all that. So, you know, I think that's an attribute that has helped me greatly with it.
You remember the first thing you were very curious about, or maybe passionate in a way?
This would be really funny. The first thing I was really curious about was climate, the weather, and why it's different in one country to another. And then what makes the weather change throughout the season. So why is it that every year at the same time we get cold again and warm again? And how can you, like, how can people predict that? I was always curious about the weather. And then why some countries would be really, really cold all the time and others would be really hot, even if they're the same positioning on the globe, because it's not that if you're further up north, it's going to be colder. The other attribute that impacted it. So I was very curious about the weather. Also, I was born obviously in a hot country, so I wanted snow.
Fair enough. Yeah. So looking back then, so you were curious, you liked reading more than you guys in our case, you were introvert. What was your kind of upbringing like in general? What was kind of, what were the core beliefs that you were parents maybe taught you?
I think my father was absent. My mom was a role model and very important in my development. I think the one thing that she was very good at is tell us kids that we're special and amazing and can do whatever we want. Mm-hmm. And that nothing can stop us other than us believing in ourselves. So she was very clear at that. If I had a bad day at school, or if I was bullied or something, and I come home, that she knew how to pick me up again and make me feel confident to go back to school the day after. Or if I failed in an exam or something, you know, when you're young, it's kind of like the end of the world is upon you, and she'll kind of put it in perspective and help me to keep on going. So I think, that's been key for me in terms of self-belief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Interesting. I mean, I think if I look back at my youth and upbringing at the time itself, and it took me a long time to realize the things that my parents have taught me and how it has kind of impacted the person who I am today, Is that something that came much sooner with you? Did you realize in the moment there what your mother did and how important that would be for you moving forward?
No. Hindsight is a fantastic thing because I think as a child, we didn't get on. I was quite stubborn as a kid. So everything that she would do and say, I would be, first reaction is no, and I disagree with you. It took many years for us to, for me to appreciate, acknowledge and appreciate what she did. I think parents underestimate the impact they have on their kids, the impact of positive and negative reinforcement have. You know, like if you say to someone that something is not right and not to behave in a certain way, then it has a huge impact on those, on the future of that person.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, I think if I look back at what my parents tried to teach me, it is very much about respecting the people around you and respecting that negativity is also part of life, and that is something that will happen regardless. Like, life is not always about ups, it's downs, and you have to go through those downs. And I think that has been important, the way that I now look at life and cope with kind of setbacks. But also how I celebrate the more positives in life and enjoy them much more than I did before, like living in the moment. And I think that's really important. How do you feel your dad being absent? Maybe just for clarity, your dad, and you never grew up having that.
Oh no, he was around, but he was working all the time. So he would come home after we went to bed, and normally before we woke up. So but my parents separated years later, and for the right reasons. So my mom did the right thing at leaving him. So it was not a huge loss for us.
Yeah. What a positive impact that Nan does at the race.
The breakup, as messy as it was a good thing for my mom. And I think that we were three kids and we were very much supportive of my mom and her decision to do it. I think it helped us seeing her in a better light because we felt that she should have done it. Mm-hmm. So I think it reinforced our belief, if you want, in doing the right thing. And even when it's really, really tough, and it was really tough for her. Because she loved him, but it was time for her to move on. And so it was quite impressive, tough, but yeah.
It makes those hard decisions, I guess, in your life, right? When you're so accustomed and so, how you say that, so attached to someone.
Yeah, so I think the world was a bit different, right? Mm. My parents met in the early 70s, late 60s. So women and women rights were very different. You know, the way that generation was raised in terms of commitment and, stay by the side of your man or whatever it is. It's very different to how things are done now. And probably things have improved, I would say, significantly rather than the other way around.
Yeah. Were you religious? Religious?
No. No religion. No, absolutely not. My mom came from a religious upbringing and she rebelled against it. And she wanted us to have nothing to do with it. Okay. So she was adamant, no religion in the house.
Is that now something that is part of you as well, non-religious, being an atheist maybe?
Yeah, so I think atheism is a form of religion because it means that you follow some rules of like, I don't believe in something, I just prefer to not even have that. So no religion whatsoever. My husband is from a Christian background, so we do now have like adopted weird some holidays. You know, I love Christmas. But I like Christmas because the tree looks really nice in the house and you get presents and you meet your friends and family. So I see it as a fun thing, not a religious thing. I'm trying to think, but Jewish holidays are fun. Can't come up with it.
Hanukkah maybe? I mean, it's...
Yeah, that's I quite like donuts. So it's a good one. Yeah.
All right, okay. That's a good reason to like.
That's a good one.
It is, I guess. Yeah, no, I mean, it's those... Holidays are over commercialized. They're no longer attached to a religion, I would say, right? Easter, yeah, of course, there is religious things around it. Same with Christmas, but it's also very much Easter Bunny or.
Yeah, if there's chocolate or anything sweet, then I'm up for it. No, I think I appreciate now, as you get older, you appreciate the time you spend with people you love and family rather than, you know, when you go to school and they teach you about the religious aspect of holidays. So that I couldn't relate to. The quality time is spent with people that I can relate.
Fair enough. Yeah. Do you remember when you were younger, what you wanted to become growing up? I mean, now you're the CEO of the international payments company, right? What did you want to become when you grew up?
Definitely not working payments. A lawyer. I wanted to be a lawyer, yeah. There was a weatherman at some point. I think being a lawyer was always, something, because it was back then, it's like seen as, I know, lawyers and doctors, right? So I didn't want to be a doctor because I'm squeamish when it comes to blood.
Okay.
A lawyer was definitely on the radar. Until I finished high school, and then like, yeah, no, not for me.
Was it a status thing then? Did you want to become a lawyer, or was there also something that caught your interest?
It's a good question. I don't think it's status. I think the requirement to go into university were the toughest.
Yeah.
So that was, I want to be able to achieve the marks that you need to if you wanted to become a lawyer and, rather than anything else.
So a high achiever, yeah?
A high achiever, yes.
Is that a characteristic?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Competitive, high achiever.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
How does that come about? How does it come about? How does it ventilate itself? How does it show itself?
Over the years, it changed,
yeah.
I think. So I've learned to, I'm very competitive,
mm-hmm.
but I've learned to enjoy doing things I'm not necessarily good at. So, for example, I'm a terrible running. I'm not very fast, but I enjoy the activity. So I'm okay losing to everyone around me when we go running because I enjoy the sport. High achiever for me, it's I like to have to learn a lot and to complete tasks. So really to finish whatever I started doing and try to do the best job possible.
Is that competitiveness, right? Does it come maybe from having siblings? I was a competitive person, and I think that comes, my reading of it is that becomes I have siblings, and
yeah.
I'm the oldest of three, so it's always been just sort of internal competition going on, especially with my younger brother. You think that where it comes from, or where do you think it comes from?
Yeah, so I'm the older of three. My brother was 18 months younger than me. As kids, he was actually bigger than me.
Yeah.
And stronger. So, I've never thought about it, but probably that's where it started, yeah. Because there was no way for me to physically beat him up. Like when you're really young and you kind of try, like he was just stronger. So I had to come up with creative ways of winning. When we were fighting.
Oh yeah, same thing. Yeah, okay. I have exactly the same problem with my brother. I hope he's not listening to this one because I don't want to give it to him. But anyway, that's a different topic. But that's cool. All right. And I mean, you're not competitive in the purest form in the sense of you say, I still love to run, even though I'm not the best at it. Whereas if I look at myself being super competitive, be like, I'm not going to run because I'd never win it. So I'm not even going to start running. See what?
Yeah. So I think probably when I was younger, it was similar to that.
Yeah.
And then I realized I'm missing out on a lot of stuff by only committing to things I can 100% win. So I found a way to compromise in my head between things that I'm very good at and can win and things that I might not be very, very good at, but still want to do. But then it's actually quite cool because you can build a story in your head as to why you're doing it and why winning is not important. And by doing that, you're already winning. So,
wow, that is very inspirational on this point. I think also I listened to a Dutch pro ice skater, as that's the season now, there's ice skating going on yet. And I think she said, you have to feel before you can win. Basically, if you want to win, you have to feel first because
yeah.
It's the only way to start learning something. Because that's a different way of looking at indeed doing the things that you might not necessarily be the best at. In order to get to becoming the best, you first have to be the worst of us.
Yeah, that makes sense. And to be like, so I had a massive ski accident a year ago, 15 months ago to be precise. And I tore my ACL, MCL and smashed my meniscus. So if you're a skier, if you're going to do it, this is how you do it.
Yeah.
Like this is the holy trinity of skiers and I did it all. So that's a winning.
You won some.
Yeah, you have to have, obviously, I had a big surgery, so reconstructive ACL surgery. So they kind of take your tendon and build a new ligament, and it's quite comprehensive. But then you have a year of rehabilitation, so physio. I think my physiotherapist will be a bit surprised at how dedicated I was because I've been doing it every day. And they have tests. So, you know, I show up every month and, you know, he tests my progress. And so I take it very seriously. I need to know, you know, what's a pass score, and then I need to get there. And most of the pass scores he had would be what an athlete at the age of 22 should be doing. And I was like, yeah, I'll give it to me, you know. So I find it really exhilarating in a way. So obviously not the injury or the physio, but the test that comes after. Because when you score and you score really, really well, you feel really good, even if it's painful.
How does this high achiever competitive side pull through in kind of your professional life? Has this also changed over these last 20 years?
I think so. I think when you're really competitive at the start of my career, probably was a lot less collaborative because you're competing with the world. So yeah, it's you against the world in many ways. I think as you grow a bit and learn, you realize that actually collaborating with others and working as a team gives you a much better power. So where probably I was less interested at what was happening around me, I've learned that, it sounds a bit like a cliche, we win as a team, but it is actually very, very accurate. So, and that's also when you move from being a self-contributor, if you want, to a leadership role, because you realize that on your own, you're never going to be as good as the sum up of all the individuals that, you know, can work together and so.
As if you lead a company or a commercial team or a commercial business.
Yes. Yeah. Company and commercial are very different things because you have different skill sets that you're using when you do it. But my side of my career was actually on risk and fraud management and compliance for my sins rather than commercial, product.
How did that come about? How did you move from being compliance director risk to more commercial side?
So I got into payment 2002. I came back from Australia. I was there for a year. I came back. I couldn't find a job. And I applied for a job. It was a company called Prog Cyber. And I was just desperate. I was applying for any job I could find. They were doing payments and it was risk management. I said, I'll just apply for it, see what happens. And I got the job there. So I got into compliance, not because I planned on getting into compliance, but it was just, I happened to get a job. So my career was a bit random in many ways.
It's law really though. I mean, I do see your red threads of you wanted to become something, a lawyer when you have kids to go into compliance. I mean, there's a...
Yeah, and I actually really enjoyed everything to do with the, you know, anti-money laundering rules and legislations and understanding what happens in different countries. And when I started was online gambling as well. So understanding rules in different countries and how laws were evolving was actually very interesting. But I don't think it's because I had any tendencies to be a lawyer rather than I was just enjoying kind of building this business structure around it. So I did that for 11 years. And then I got to a point where I thought, you know, because I moved from one company to another, always working in the same environment. And I got bored with it
a little bit.
Yeah. And felt that, like, what could I do next? And the next move was how to capitalize on the knowledge I have and transfer it to do something different. So I knew how I was the buyer for so many salespeople. So they will come and try and sell me payments product, risk management. And so I knew what good looked like. And I knew also what it does, like, what I didn't like when someone will come and, you know, sell me the wrong way. So when the opportunity came with Worldpay, it was a fantastic way for me to use my skills as a payments expert and move into a payments company and then sell into the businesses that I used to be part of before. So that was actually a calculated move, unlike the risk management one. But I kept on going, like the first couple of years, I go to meetings and say, I'm not a salesperson. That would be my opening statement. And it worked.
It's very disarming, I guess, right? People expect a salesperson, someone comes in, I'm not a salesperson.
Yeah, but I think so what I'm really passionate about when it comes to is not the sales or it's the payments. I'm really passionate about the payments industry. You know, so I think once I got the bug, if you want, of payments, and I found it really exciting. And so everything I've done was based on the fact that I think I know payments really well. and I know what companies want, and I'm really passionate about the consumer experience. So how you make life easier for whoever wants to pay for something, buy something to do that. And that excites me. So everything I've done, I think, is linked into that point. Even like to become a CEO, like I never planned on being a CEO. You know, some people are like professional CEOs. I'm passionate about payments. And I, you know, when the previous CEO here, Simon Black, decided to leave, I was excited by the opportunity because I thought that I could do something amazing here because of my passion to payments and because I was my passion to people. But it wasn't, I just need to be a CEO somewhere. It was very specific because of my passion to payments.
Berlin presents the new highlight in the financial sector, FIBE, the FinTech and Finance Festival for the global stage. On April 24 and 25, this innovative format will celebrate its premiere at CityCube Berlin, organized by the Berlin Finance Initiative in cooperation with Handelsblatt and Messe Berlin. FIBE is aligned at the entire FinTech ecosystem in Europe, from up-and-coming FinTech startups and investors to established banks and political decision makers. As the proud media partner for the event, we will also be recording a very special live episode of In Check with FinTech at FIBE, so make sure to grab your discounted ticket now using the promo code FIBE_special, and we'll be looking forward to seeing you there.
I think that, I mean, Pipro strikes me as well as a company that is very passionate about payments. I think Simon Black was always very much, for me at least, a figure in the industry that was very passionate about payments. So I think that in that way it's been a perfect fit, for sure.
I think so. It's been almost 6 months now. I'm having a fantastic time. We're doing really, really well. I think we have amazing plans. So it definitely feels like, obviously the foundations that, you know, that Simon built were a great starting point. So I'll give you huge credit for that. But it felt like, because I'm so passionate about the industry and the company, then there's some fantastic people here. So you can really do exciting things now and for the future.
Something else you're very passionate about is diversity and inclusion, right? Pretty openly gay CEO. What's that like in today's fintech environment?
I think in today's environment, it's probably a lot better than it was in the past. Mm-hmm. The start of my career, when I started working, it was very different. And I think most of my friends, you know, when we came out of university, would never disclose that they're gay or lesbians or bisexual. It doesn't matter where you sit on the rainbow, or fear of not getting a job or being discriminated against, etc. And I think, so we have moved, you know, and progressed a lot over the last couple of decades. I thought a lot about it. I watched a movie a couple of weeks ago called All of Us Strangers. And the story there is about a gay guy, Andrew Scott, who is actually very close to me. I think he's a couple of years younger than me. Mm-hmm. And there are two plots in the story. The one is relevant here. His parents died in a car crash when he's 12. And in the movie, he's back with them. But he's now in his late 40s and his parents died in the 80s. So they were, you know, they're stuck in that point. And he's coming out to them and he's telling them, so he's in his late 40s, but he's telling his parents from the 80s that he's gay. And their reaction reminded me very much of my parents, you know. Is this the life you want for yourself? You're going to be alone. You're going to be sad. You're going to, you know, it's really, really difficult. And that's a reaction a generation had to, you know, cope with. It's very different to the world we live in now. And he said, like, oh, but the world has changed. You know, I can get married now. I can do all the things that straight people can do. And I'm telling you that a lot because I think, you know, are we where we should be? No, but we've done a lot of work, I think, in getting to a better place. For me, being open about being gay is, you know, the pay forward piece. When I was younger, I didn't have role models. And I think diversity for me, it's not just about gays or women or black people. It's, you know, having role models wherever you go, someone you can look up to and think I can be, you know, this is someone who looks like me, talk like me. And if they can make it, then I can also make it, is really, really important. And I've had so many conversations with people that are gay or women, etc., who find it tough in the workplace. And then I think having people like me who normalize being, you know, outspoken, unapologetic, and normal about it. I know it sounds like the wrong word to use. It makes it, gives them, it's motivating and reassuring. Yeah. Is the right word here?
Yeah. Inspirational, I guess, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't want to consider myself.
Hard to say about yourself.
Yeah.
I can imagine people look up to you and think, okay, that's the way to treat it if they are gay, lesbian, whatever they are.
Yeah. I think a few years ago, I wrote like a newsletter and it was after the Eurovision. I'm a big Eurovision fan. In a newsletter, I wrote that my husband and I went to the Eurovision and by the experience. And for me, it was just a normal newsletter, you write. And the feedback, you know, from everyone was, it's the first time that someone, a guy wrote about, my husband and I did something together. People didn't go past that comment because it was, I wrote it just because it was the case. We just went to the Eurovision, but for people in the company, it was like, it's so nice that, you know, you can just talk about your husband and yourself in that way. Yeah.
Has it always been like that? I mean, being normal about it, is that something that you did from the get-go, or is it something that you kind of developed over time? And so how did you do that?
Honest with myself and Eva, it was always important for me. I think it's really exhausting when you're gay, because you're spending your life coming out all the time. So you always have to come out to people. And so I decided once I came out when I was 17, never to go back in the closet. So even, you know, from the first time I applied for jobs, even when I went to university, I was always very open about being gay, even if it meant that I was having a harder time at school, or, you know, I'd apply for jobs and I had job interviews and I'd be very open about it. Because, you know, my kind of view of the world was, I'd rather be honest about it, and if someone has a problem with it, not to hire me, and find additional reasons why they didn't hire me, than to not be able to be myself when I go somewhere. It was tougher, you know, when I started my career. I had some unpleasant experiences, as you can imagine, in different workplaces, both in payments. Also, I worked in online gambling, which was a very male-dominated environment. So I had quite a few experiences that were less than pleasant. Some I would like to call them character building exercises or experiments. And I imagine you still have it now in different places. I'm just very lucky. And I think some of it also the confidence to be able to get through it. Mm-hmm. I think even in today's environment, you still hear some comments, you know, all the people will say they're less pleasant.
Yeah, still, unfortunately, it's still the case. Yeah, and indeed, like you said, different parts of the world responds to it differently still, unfortunately. But if you say your parents responded the same way as the parents did in the film, yeah? Are you sure about this?
Yeah.
Sad place, it's going to be very lonely. That must be hard, no? Because you don't have a safe place to go home with, or was your mother not unacceptable of you? She was still accepting of you, but just trying to warn you, or?
So my mom, her first reaction, I think, was to protect me.
Yeah.
And then to protect herself in many ways, because protect me was, there was a perception of being gay back then. Then this is like late 80s, early 90s. So it's a kind of AIDS pandemic as well. So she had many images in her head. None of them was very positive. So there was a perception that if you're gay, you're going to be alone. You're not going to have many friends. You're never going to get married and have kids. And, you know, the society we lived in, happiness equaled marriage plus two. Yeah. And there was no other option for people. And then it was also just the dynamic between her and my father, where she assumed that he will blame her for me turning gay. So there was that dynamic in the background. We had a lot of conversations in years past that. And actually, when then she met her boyfriend, for the first thing she said to him, one of the first things is, you know, my son, by the way, is gay, and if you have any problem with it, then we have no future. So she moved forward with it. You know, I was very lucky when Peter, my husband, and I were married. Our parents forged really good friendship, my mom and his parents, and they visited each other after, and stayed very close. So, but the journey to get there I was very lucky. It wasn't bumpy, but the start was as you expected in probably in a 1990.
Did you prepare yourself? Was there a way to prepare yourself for all that has come over this past 30 years or so? I mean, now looking back, obviously, I guess it's probably you still look back and think, yeah, well, it wasn't that difficult because look where I am now. I'm a confident CEO of P-Pro. I have a successful life. I'm a happily married to a married guy to my husband. Do you remember at the time or when you came out, were you looking at it in the same way? No, okay, I will struggle. There will be people coming at me negatively or...
To be honest, I didn't think that I would be where I am now. I didn't think it wasn't on the card. Like if you had told me 20 years ago that I'd be married, then of course I would have said it's impossible for me to be married. Being a CEO wasn't also something I would have said I'm going to be one day. I knew I'm going to be really good at whatever I'm going to do because I always believed that I would be very good. And I'm going to work really hard to get there. I just, they're there. I just couldn't define.
No, yeah.
I think, you know, if you look over the last, you know, the history of the last 30 years of what happened in the world, like it's so hard to imagine, like it's impossible to think what the world looked like 30 years ago and how much of where we are now we were able to anticipate. I mean, we work in an industry that didn't really exist, you know, 20 years ago. So I think I was very lucky to be surrounded with the right people as well and build the right friendships and have the right mentors and coaches and people that helped me throughout the years. You know, it takes an army to get to wherever you go to.
I mean, I can only... sympathize and have respect for the process you've been through. I mean, in that sense, I have a very easy life, straight, white male.
Yeah.
That is, I think, unfortunately, in today's environment, still, you can have a very safe and comfortable life in that regard. I mean, I have friends coming out and, all have a different degrees of success or, unsuccess or however you want to describe it. I was thinking about preparation of doing the interview with you and about talking about this, and I think if I look at where do we want to be, I think we want to be in a place where we don't invite people on podcasts, on TV shows to talk about them being gay, interracial, whatever it is. But we have them on the show because we talk to them about a specific topic, about their journey. What does that look like for you? Kind of that, where do we need to go?
Yeah, good. So I think for me, what I'm trying to do is use my personal story to, you know, now as a CEO of a company, to make sure that we have the right diversity structure, plans, in the business. So, because diversity is so many things, you know, me being gay is one of them. Many women in this business, we still don't have enough women, you know, on the exec team, leadership team, etc. So you have to build all that. But it takes time to do it. So you really have to seriously and genuinely believe that it's important.
Mm-hmm.
You have to understand why it's important. And it's important not because it looks good, but because businesses are diverse and have different types of people in them from different backgrounds and different experiences and colors and religion, whatever it is, make for much more successful businesses because you have more ideas, you have a culture that is more inclusive and those businesses just thrive, you know, and it's the same with societies, you know, communities that are open and embracing are happier communities. So I think for me, it's really, really important that we do it and that we lay the foundations for generations to come, you know, so it's not just about hiring the senior person who can do it, but it's hiring diverse entry-level roles. So you build the next generation of leaders. You build the foundation for what the society and businesses would look in 2050. You know, because the leaders of 2045, you know, if you look at my career, I've probably joined P-Pro in the last year or so. right? 20 years later, one of them could potentially be a CRP for a different company.
I think the diversity, what you say there, is that you need to do diversity. You need to know why you're doing it, because it is really important for the development of an organization, right? Sorry for butchering it, but do you think that within fintech specifically, companies know why they need to be diverse, or are they sometimes a victim of a marketing exercise?
I think it's, you have the both types, and it's quite easy to see which one belongs to which camp, and I'm not going to name anyone.
No.
But there are companies do it because it looks good and you have a checkbox exercise of how many people have in different roles. And there are companies that genuinely believe in building a diverse workforce, and they do an amazing job with that. And I want us to be in the second group.
Yeah.
So we're working very hard on that.
Yeah. Have you always been that kind of advocate throughout those 20 years of career, or was there not always that place within an organization because it wasn't that high on the agenda, or because people just didn't listen?
So I think probably over the last decade, there's a lot more attention to diversity in businesses. There are more forums to discuss it. There are more, it's more on the agenda. So I would say that also maybe because of my evolution as a person, there's more of that. Also, universities are paying more attention to it. So there's a lot more coming out of universities as students prepare for life after university, of getting, you know, professionals to come and talk and about their careers in different industries. It could be the industry, it could be the diversity part to get you there. But I've done a couple of those, both on the kind of fintech to students and both diversity to students. And what is really striking is that we think that we have progressed a lot, but you will still sit in front of, you know, young kids for me, like that. But their fears a lot of the time are not different to the ones I had, you know, 20 years ago, but like coming to a workplace, disclosing their personal circumstances. So you have a lot of that. But you can also see it with women, right? At a certain age, the fear of not getting a job because she just got married and might be seen as someone who wants to have a baby. So it's not, you know, it's this, the range of diversity is much greater than that. And I think, so I'm trying to really lean on my personal experience to be a lot more sensitive to everything to do with diversity.
Yeah, and I think you talk about, well, you didn't like me to use the word inspiring, but I'm going to use it anyway. You inspire young people, you probably inspire people here, whether that's about being gay or about being the CEO of a company, about being a high achiever. How have those things, your upbringing from your mom talking about pull through, stay positive, from being competitive to being such a big advocate of diversity, how has this influenced your leadership style and the culture that you're trying to build here right now, I mean, with EPRO?
Yeah, I mean, you probably need to ask someone else, but no, I think we had our first senior leadership offsite last week, which was amazing. And I think being authentic is really important, and I think being transparent and open is really important. And I try to be all of the above. So I think it's really important to be yourself, be aware of where you're very good and strong and your areas of development, and share that, you know, talk to the people around you about what you do really well and where they need to help you so you can improve. And that's constant, you know, and I think I said at the start, change and curiosity, like we never stop evolving. Like we always grow and change and there's always something new to work on in terms of personal development, areas that we might do better or not. Even when you take over as a CEO of a company, you know, your style when you start is different to how it's going to evolve over time because, you understand the business different. You have the leadership around you. You know what you need to steer and where you have to let go and let other people lead. So it's never the same. It's constantly changing.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it can be a lonely place as well sometimes, right? As a CEO, maybe in these past 5 months, you haven't necessarily experienced that just yet as much, but I know it myself. I mean, even though you have a leadership team around you, sometimes it can be very lonely because, yeah, all the, everything's on your shoulders, at least that's what it feels like for me.
Yeah, it's. I thought it was a cliche before. I can confirm it is a bit lonely to be a CEO. And look, I'm very grateful. I have, I think, support of the board, which has been critical, as well as senior leadership. But yes, you are sitting as a CEO, like the buck stops with you, as they say. And sometimes it's a bit daunting, but also exciting. So. I think all those years as a child sitting on my own reading books prepped me for spending less time with others and a bit more kind of self-reliant, if you want, and you trust my instincts sometimes as well.
Yeah.
The beauty of having a senior team around you of experts is that you can actually do less of the alone and more with kind of the wider team.
True. Share a lot.
Yeah.
Last question for me then. You've been in this role now for 5 months. What's been the highest high? What's been the lowest low in his last 5 years?
The lowest low, not been too many of those. I think lowest low, there was one when there was an unhappy employee and we had a chat about her experience and it, you know, and she had some tough time and that was really, really hard for me. To hear a story. So that would have been the lowest one. And the highest, I think, last week, senior leadership transformational project. So we work on a huge amount of project for the business, OKRs and operating model and kind of plans for 2024 and beyond. And just the energy that you get from all this brain power sitting and the excitement that everyone brings in. So that would be the highest high.
Great.
Thanks, Willoughby.
Share your story, share your experience. Straight white male, sorry to say it again, but it's very inspirational also to hear from you how it's been these past 20 years and throughout your life, of course. Good luck.
Thank you. It's been great.
Thank you for listening to this episode of In Check with FinTech. If you liked what you heard, rate our podcast on Spotify and follow us to get updated with our latest episodes. Are you looking for some exclusive content? Then don't forget to follow our LinkedIn page, PCN, and check out our website, teampcn.com.